Hey, everyone, and welcome to today's episode of Beyond the Rock podcast. I'm your host, Emily Hernandez, and comedic relief is provided by my co-host, Jeremy Ernst. If you have not yet done so, please click that subscribe button so you never miss another episode. And if you like what we're doing here, write us a rating and review, or share it on your social media account. You can tag us at Beyond the Rock Podcast. Today's guest and founder of She Sense Collective is Chelsea Rood. Chelsea is a professional climber and coach supported by Adidas and 5'10". She currently lives in Boulder, Colorado, and has been rock climbing since 1998. While Jeremy originally thought Chelsea was a stand-up comedian, I had the fortune of getting to know her after a talk she hosted at Austin Bouldering Project. Throughout today's interview, Chelsea emphasized the importance of chasing the fun in climbing, and not just the grades. She, Jeremy, and I were all on board with the fact that climbers should never downplay their personal accomplishments. Each one of them matters, regardless of the grade that was climbed, or whether it was in the gym or out at the crag. As leaders in our respective female climbing communities, Chelsea and I got to reflect on how amazing it is to witness the magic that happens when women climb with other women. In addition to on-siting 513s all over the world and crushing V11s and 514B, Chelsea is one of the most kind, generous, and humble humans I've ever met. Okay, I will not spoil any more of her awesomeness. I'll go ahead and let you hear it for yourself. Here's Chelsea Rood. Hey, Chelsea, how's it going?
Hi, Em. Good. How are you?
Hi, Chelsea.
Doing well.
How are you guys?
Good, good.
We are doing well down here in Austin, probably maybe a little better environmentally than Colorado.
Yeah, Colorado. Well, I feel like a lot of the U.S. has been
burning. I know.
Yeah. But yeah, this weekend, I think it was Friday, we had like a ton of smoke blow in to Boulder from the largest fire in Colorado's history, which is just like 60 miles away from where I live. And it was so eerie. The sky turned orange and it literally looked like doomsday. And then Saturday rolled around and we got a fire in Boulder County. That's like, I don't even remember how many acres. But then on Sunday, we had another fire start in Boulder County. So yeah, and then I guess there's one like in the San Juan Mountains now. And yeah, it's just maybe not the greatest season.
It definitely isn't. We happened to be in Boulder in August, and then we were in Mammoth Lakes in September. And my fiance and his partner were climbing in Tuolumne. And exactly what you said, they saw this huge cloud. They thought it was going to rain. Their eyes got red. Their noses started running. And then they said ash started raining down on them.
Yeah. Literally, it's terrible.
Yeah, it is. It's tragic. It's devastating. And of course, here I am opening up the podcast with such a positive note. Man. I think I'm two for two.
It's okay. It's 2020.
Right. It's about appropriate for the year and the start of the decade, eh?
Yeah, definitely. Just a lot of ash raining and dirty air and
literally and figuratively
hot temperatures and, you know, anyway,
hot tempers and temperatures.
I was gonna say hot tempers, yeah.
Hot tempers and temperatures. Yes.
Dirty air and dirty politics.
Yes. Everything's just so dirty this year.
it really is. But you know what? We're not. So let's shift this, because when I see you, I see smiles quite often, despite so many things that you've experienced in your, are we 34? Are you 34?
We are.
34.
As of August.
Whoop, whoop. Woo.
That's so weird. I'm officially in my mid-30s. What the hell?
You are. Here's Jeremy smirking over here. He's our elder.
It happens. I'm 45.
Ooh, you don't even look it.
Thank you. The weird thing is I turned 45 and I'm just thinking, in 15 years, I'm going to be 60.
Ooh.
And that sounds like a really small number, but anything, but you can raise an entire human in 15 years.
That's
you know,
true.
From like birth to like high school.
Yeah.
So
apparently
it's not that bad. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to find out, but
what are you planning on doing in these next 15 years?
Climbing as long as I can. I don't know, buying a house.
Ooh, I like it.
That's my plan for next year, is to buy a house. But climbing as much as possible and planning retirement.
He's a, what do you call it? A
pebble wrestler.
Yeah, and yeah. Or Hans said, we had Hans Blurring last week, and he mentioned, like,
I practice for climbing.
A boulder.
Or a pad person.
Pad person.
Pad
yes.
person. That sounds a pad like a person. Feminine product.
That's fact, true.
Last week, I got asked why I was carrying a mattress on my back.
Do you have an elaborate story to share with these people?
No, I didn't know. We're going climbing.
I mean, it is a mattress.
It was 8 o'clock in the morning. I didn't have an elaborate. What?
It is a mattress, though, when you need to take a nap midway through your sesh.
I've never done that.
You're not living.
It's quite nice.
I've only had one of my climbing partners who was hungover from the night before. She took a nap on the... like two out of the four times I've been to E-Rock, one of the people I've been with has been hungover and taking a nap somewhere. I'm like, something about E-Rock. It's a long drive to be hungover.
It is. It is, definitely. But, you know, speaking of driving, I don't know if you would be driving or flying to the red, but you, Chelsea, recently announced that you are going to be heading back to the red to hit up an old project that you started 6 years ago.
Yes. Yes.
First of all, how do you even pronounce that route name?
Thanatopsis.
Thanatopsis.
Yep.
Talk to us about that.
I don't really know what that means, but yeah, I'm flying, which is weird, given that it's 2020 and we're still in the middle of a pandemic. But due to time's sake, we thought that flying would make more sense because that is a very long drive. That's like...
Sure.
17 plus hours or so.
I know from Chicago, I think it's 7 because when Michaela Kirsch was working on her project, she talked about doing her homework while she was on the road.
Yeah. Yeah. I do not want to do any sort of homework for 17 hours straight. So yeah, we're flying and yeah, like you said, I started this project like 6 years ago. And I guess that's kind of when I retired from competition and really wanted to push my limits outdoors. And previous to that, I climbed outdoors, but I was always like a 5 tries and under climber. Like I never actually put time into projecting something, especially far away from home. So yeah, I went and tried it and didn't do it and walked away. Went back for a weekend and it was wet, of course, because you know it's the red and
of course
the weather's a little finicky. Walked away, and then since then I've had knee surgery and shoulder surgery and so many things. So yeah.
Yeah. You do. Yeah, you have been through a lot these past 5 years. Sorry, Jeremy.
No, go ahead. You keep talking. You're talking on something.
I always keep talking, but I'll let you have.
I was going to tell you, thanatopsis means a consideration of death.
Of death?
A death.
Oh, of death.
Thanatopsis is a poem by American poet William Cullen Bryant, meaning a consideration of death. It's a good name for a sport rap.
Hey, easy.
Yeah.
Probably be a better consideration for or a better name for a boulder.
Well, let's hope that maybe do you know who the first Ascensionist was by chance?
You know what? I don't. I probably should.
I bet Jeremy's about to let us know.
I can look. I'm not that good.
I know that the first female Ascensionist was Sasha.
Really?
Yep.
Okay. All right. Is it, and it's a sport route?
it is sport.
Because I believe there are a lot of trad routes that don't get as much love in the red, that are kind of, I don't want to say hidden, but they can be right next to some of the most popular sport routes out there. Is that right?
Oh yeah, totally. I've heard it's really good. I've never placed a piece of gear at the red.
It's amazing. I haven't placed, but I've followed.
Yeah.
And we did more trad than sport. But it, again, the weather was terrible. And I was with a partner that I met on Mountain Project. And let's just say I should have done a little more research. I left a day early because of it. He would not shut up. I literally... We were walking on the trail, the leaves were falling, and he just like an incessant talker. And I finally said, I'm going to hang back because I really just want to listen to the leaves fall on the ground. And he was like, all right. And just like walked ahead of me. I really just wanted to say, would you shut the hell up?
Yeah, seriously. You're brave. I have never found a project on Mount. All right, partner on Mountain Project, and I don't think I will ever.
It was a one and done.
Yeah. Although some people find it works really well.
Yes.
But for me, I'm a little too picky as far as like I have trust issues and I want someone that I trust belaying me.
I was going to say, I've only ever had two people ever belay me. And I hear stories about people going to Yosemite and just getting a partner at Camp 4 or something like that. I'm like,
yeah,
that'll never happen.
Nope. Not for me either.
So the first ascensionist was Dave Hume.
Dave Hume, that's right. Back in like early 2000s, right?
Does not give me that information.
Well, I'm excited for you. It doesn't seem like you really want to discuss with us where that went, which is totally fine.
No, what else did you want to know?
I don't know. I didn't know if there was a connection or if it was just a project that you revived or if it literally is just going back to a project because you want to.
Yeah, I think it literally is just going back because I want to.
Cool.
I have definitely mentioned like last year that I was going to go back to the red, but I never really... committed, I guess. Like mm-hmm. I really wanted to, but when push came to shove, I was like, nah, you know, I think last year my dog had two cancerous tumors. So she had to get those removed and I didn't feel comfortable leaving her. I really wanted to be at home and just make sure that she was all good. And honestly, it was just like, a good reason not to go. Like, I don't think that I was ready mentally. I had doubts about myself and was just really struggling with really, what I wanted to do with climbing.
You've mentioned that a few times on different mediums. And that's, I mean, I feel connected to you because you and I met a couple years ago and I feel like we had this instant connection. And
yeah.
You've always just been so kind, but of course I've watched you on social media and you are so intentional and so honest about things. I completely forgot where I was going with that, but I just want to say, I guess, since I forgot, I really appreciate that. And I'm sure your audience and your followers do too.
Yeah. I think, I can't be anything but honest. But I definitely have pulled away from social media in the last probably 2.5 years or so, I guess. And I think it was around that time where I was like, I don't know what I want to do with climbing. Like I just had a whole bunch of mixed emotions for various reasons, for personal experiences, for losing way more friends than anyone should ever have to due to like the mountains or to climbing, having a big injury/surgery. And yeah, I don't know. I just felt really lost and like didn't even really know what to share or how to share. And yeah, it's just been kind of a weird 2.5 year time frame, I guess.
Yeah, you definitely have lost unfortunately large handful of people close to you, and mm-hmm. most recently Chris.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so sorry. I mean, Chris, Nolan, Hayden, Jess, Savannah. I mean, I've lost a lot of people as well, but the tragic nature in the way that these very close friends of yours were lost is exactly that. So tragic. And with the Climbing Grief Fund, I wanted to ask you, do you feel that that came at the right time for people who are mourning the losses like we are of our friends?
I mean, I think that losing people due to climbing accidents or mountain accidents has been happening for obviously since we started venturing into those arenas. So it would have been helpful had this come up sooner. But at the same time, given that, I think that now is a better time than any, right? Like, especially, I really feel that, you know, therapy and just talking about one's feelings and all of that has really been destigmatized a little bit. But a little bit is a very big step. And so I think that the upcoming of the Climbing Grief Fund just kind of fits that whole where we are as a society is there are pockets and little tiny steps of improvement. And so I think that it just fits. And for me, I didn't really understand what the Climbing Grief Fund was initially. And it was actually Madeline Sorkin who she founded the Climbing Grief Fund. She literally had to she found me at one of the American Alpine Club Kragan Classic events mm-hmm. in Devil's Lake last year and pinned me down, and they were doing this workshop and she was like, yeah, it's 3 hours long. And I was like, okay, I'll go, but I'm only going to go for 45 minutes or something. I thought it was scary for some reason. I don't know why. I didn't stay for the 3 hours, but only because I had a flight to catch. I would have. It was so impactful and just helped change my, just helped me kind of come out of my shell a little bit, especially around the death of my friend Savannah, who happened to have her accident there at Devil's Lake. So it was really profound and just really special. And I just feel like I owe Madeline everything just for pinning me down in that day.
They're very fortunate to have you. That was supremely tragic. My fiance Brian actually shot pictures of Savannah and she had asked to use them. So when I was discussing it, was after Brad Gobright died. I had a really emotional reaction after that because Brian was supposed to go to EPC the next day. And the girls he was supposed to go with canceled on him. I just had this knee-jerk reaction and I was a mess. And I started talking about you and our community losing Savannah. And his face completely changed and we were both so emotional. And you honor her in so many ways, but especially with She Sends Collective. And we are so fortunate that you started that. Can you share with our audience how that evolved and where you're at with it now?
Yeah. I honestly think it's something that's going to keep evolving.
Of course. Yeah.
As are all of we as humans. But Savannah was like a little sister to me. And the summer before her accident, she came out to Colorado to do an internship at the American Alpine Club, which is where I was working at the time. And I had coached her previously and met her at various climbing training camps and whatnot. And she texted me. She's like, I'm coming to Colorado. We should climb. And full psych Savannah fashion. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so excited. And she ended up, she had an apartment in Denver, but she really wanted to be in Boulder. And I wasn't at my house a whole lot. So she kind of just took over my room for the summer. And then she took over as Puma's godmother, I would say.
Chelsea's sweet dog.
Yeah, she's my little dog. And anyway, Savannah struggled with eating disorder since she was a young teenager. And there's so much we could say about that. But the summer that she came out to Colorado was really significant in her life because it was the first time that Savannah started to spread her wings a little bit. She, like I said, moved away from Chicago for the summer for her internship. So it was the first time that she was living alone. And two, it was the first time that she had been away and still having to like work through her eating disorder. So virtually on her own. And she had mentioned to me multiple times how, you know, it was really difficult. However, she was rocking it, you know, and like she was never shy about saying that she was struggling on this day or that day. But overall, she was like, you know, I'm really proud of myself. But now I want to like bring education around eating disorder and help provide resources for people to get help to the climbing community. And so another little backstory is climbing community, or our climbing community, has been, for lack of a better term, plagued with eating disorder for as long as I've known it. And I've been in this community for 22 years. And it's only been recently, as in like the last couple of years, that people have really been talking about and opening up about their personal eating disorder and the impact it had on their climbing and the impact it's had on them as an adult since then. And so I've always wanted to create some sort of organization that brought women together through climbing, but I also really wanted to help Savannah fulfill that dream of hers by bringing education to our community. And even more important, like providing resources for people to get the help that they need during their recovery, because it is very expensive and it takes a team, and resources like that are very difficult to come by. So She Sense Collective obviously is a climbing organization for women, cis and non-cisgender, but it's also a place where we focus on education, not only with climbing, but with disordered eating, with creating a better relationship with food and yourself, where we focus on even working on the mental side of things. So more positive self-talk and things like that. That's She Sense Collective in a nutshell.
And that's absolutely amazing. Disordered eating does plague the climbing community, women especially.
Mm-hmm.
In the foundation of just the society that we live in. And then I can only imagine in the world of professional climbing, just the pressure that you've experienced and how early it probably started with coaches critiquing you as an athlete.
Oh yeah.
Am I incorrect or?
No, you're absolutely right. Like I remember for me personally, I had to have been like 13 or something. Like, I don't think I was in high school yet. I think I was still in middle school. I was young for my grade. And I lived in Atlanta. And I remember these two coaches coming out to Atlanta from Colorado. And of course I was like, yeah, dad, get me in with them. And of course he did. And I don't remember anything about this session except for that they had those little like pinching calipers where they like measure your fat percentage. And then they kind of put it into a formula and whatever, whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, 13 years old, and I have these two coaches like pinching my hips and my back and my underarms and like, and all these places. And that was the first time where I was like, oh, well, is this bigger than it should be? You said it was, so I guess I need to lose some weight. And I was 13, like 14 maximum.
I don't know what those are called. I went through the same thing in either my late middle school or early high school. And I remember the feel like, what are they grabbing? And it's like, oh, well, it's something and it shouldn't be. And you look at the other girl. Yeah. I don't know what those are called. What are they called?
Body fat calipers, I think.
body fat calipers.
So
yeah,
I never had a coach or anything do it, but when I was in high school, I grew up heavy. I'm still heavy. But when I was in high school, I ran cross country and I got real lean because I was also a teenager, right? I could eat a whole pizza and lose 5 pounds. But
yeah,
you know, I could grab a roll on my belly and think, well, I'm fat. You know, now I can grab like a whole loaf of bread on my belly. But yeah, I think, you know, it sucks when it's like institutionalized what you guys experience, but I think people go through it on both sexes, both genders. And
yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Like M, you said, especially women, but I think that there's still so many guys in the climbing community that suffer from eating disorder, and we might not know about it because it's not talked about as much. But one person in particular, a male who has been coming forward with his experiences, Kai Leitner.
Yes, he has. Yep. Thankfully so.
Yeah. Yeah.
And not to say I'm thankful that he has gone through what he has, but I'm thankful that a young man with his presence and his voice, raised by such an amazing mother, mm-hmm. is speaking up.
Absolutely.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really cool to see guys start to address some issues that I feel like women have been addressing and tackling for a few years now, like body positivity and, you know, body image and those kind of things.
Yeah. I think it's really important because even if you didn't have any experience with the body fat calipers as a kid, like you said, and this is the case with Savannah, like Savannah was a young girl playing soccer and the girls on her team made fun of her because she had, you know, some belly rolls or something like this. And it's like nothing abnormal, but that is what really spun her into her disordered eating at the time. And like that happens to so many kids. So we just get picked on and bullied and it sticks with us sometimes. So it's good to talk about it as adults.
Yeah. I used to joke about it, but only kind of half joking. I used to say like, if you didn't have a body image issue, just hang out at the climbing gym for a little while and you'll have one. Cause everybody there is in such good shape.
Yeah. But I think that unfortunately there is some truth in that. And it's really sad actually, because I think that if somebody goes to the climbing gym and they don't see other people that look like them, then it makes them feel less welcome, right?
For sure.
And I imagine like guys and girls were and anything in between, like we're all human and we were really sensitive to, or at least we all want to feel welcome, right? And climbing, I think, has a really great community. But I think there are also people in the community who are not welcome and who will make fun or will not invite someone over just because of the way that they look or how hard they climb or don't climb.
For sure.
I do agree. And I do believe that that is also the human condition innumerable amount of categories.
Mm-hmm.
And I could do an entire episode on disordered eating and my disordered eating and how I started trying to take diet pills in middle school because you could order them from the TV, you know, 1-800 number. I could get them at the pharmacy at the grocery store and they would sell them to me,
mm-hmm.
like hydroxy cut and like the, I mean, just insane stuff. The excess, it's terrible. And anyways, She Sins Collective, I so appreciate that you have started. I think it's a very niche, I don't want to say purpose, but it's very specific. I know that if I want those resources and I want them to relate to my lifestyle, that's where I go. And that's amazing.
Thank you that you
have provided that. Absolutely. I also remember you mentioning when you see women getting together in a retreat or a clinic style setting, that you see, and excuse me, this isn't verbatim, but you see a connection, you see a supportive environment that you don't traditionally see at the gym or at the crag. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me how that evolves from the beginning to the end of your clinics and how you foster that type of environment as the instructor, the leader?
Yeah. I don't really know what it is in particular.
I don't
either. You know, like, I'm going to admit it. I'm a woman. Women can be weird. There can be very weird energy between women. Yes. And yet at the same time, there can be really powerful, uplifting, and supportive, you know, energy / sisterhood between women. And I think that that is a really special thing. Like when you find that sisterhood, it's like, I don't know if there's anything else that compares to it, right? Other than like actually having a sister potentially, which I wouldn't know. I'm an only child.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
So, growing up, I didn't have any other female climbing partners. There were other girls on the climbing team and it was cool for a while. And then energy got all weird and it just got weird because girls are weird, especially around that age. Right. But I think the biggest thing is that the population of women in climbing wasn't what it is today. Like it was definitely a male dominated sport back in the day. Today, it's still, you know, kind of a male dominated sport, but women, we are definitely, we're coming in at you, men. We're coming for you.
Coming for you.
Yes.
It's cool. You don't have to fight us or anything.
You don't want us to fight you. I promise.
Don't worry. At least I don't want to fight you. I don't want to fight anyone. I'm a lover. I'm not a fighter.
I see, like 75% of the people I climb with are women.
Yeah. And so with that, I think it is very dependent on where you live in the country. As far as like, if there are more women or not, I think it just very much depends on where you are. But over the last 5 years, I've been focusing more on teaching women specific clinics. And I think for me, I just connect with teaching women more. With guys, I find that this is not 100% true. So guys, hang tight. Just give me a second. But with the majority of guys that I have taught, they don't want to hear what I have to say. They want to really focus on strength. They want to get stronger, faster, quicker versus me. Like that is not my approach at all. My approach is definitely like, let's definitely build your base for technique that will make you climb harder, because you're going to be able to climb smarter. And then from there, we start working on strength and whatnot. And there are definitely some guys and girls that don't want to hear that, which is totally fine. But that's one of the reasons why I do like working with women more, is because the majority of them are a lot more receptive to my approach. And I always say this, but it's true. It's like just so much more magical for me to be able to connect with a woman and help her with her climbing goals. And I don't know what it is, but then, so I started working with like women's groups, and that is even better because they get to know one another and I get to just kind of facilitate and hold space for these women who are learning the same skills. They don't feel like they have to have two different hats on, or that guy over there is cute, I want to like impress him. There's just a lot more authenticity, I think, with women's groups than mixed gender groups. And I also find that these women in these groups are a lot more forward with their questions. They're a lot less reserved. And I think that's really important because with these clinics, you know, they are a limited amount of time. And so I really want these people to get the most out of me as they can. And it just always seems to be better when it's like one gender versus multi-gender clinics. I think I answered your question.
You did. Well, you're making me think about the statement you made about how in the environment with all women, there is a higher likelihood and there's more strength behind a question about something. Whereas with heterosexual men, and I'm not saying toxic masculinity, I'm just saying heterosexual men, we sometimes won't ask the question because we don't want to, excuse me, I don't want to say we. In my personal experience, I would sometimes feel embarrassed to ask.
Yeah.
And you are absolutely right. That's what I was thinking of after you finished that. I mean, you make very good points with that.
Yeah.
I do agree.
So I have a question for both of you. Do you think that's something that we'll ever get past?
What do you mean get past exactly?
Like the need to have these separate organizations, but separate training and separate things like that to, because of these situations where women don't feel comfortable asking questions in front of men, or they're going to feel, I don't know, objectified in front of men, or the need to perform in front of men, or the vice versa. Same with men. I'm just curious.
I'm sorry.
I didn't mean to interrupt because my opinion is I don't feel like guys necessarily feel the same way. Does that make?
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. And all my guy friends have said the same thing, actually, that they don't feel the same way. But I would say that I don't really know if we're making progress if we get past having these female specific groups, because female specific groups are actually kind of a new thing. Versus, like, we haven't always had that space. And like I said, I just think a lot more confidence is evoked from women being with other women. And I don't think it's anything that guys are doing specifically. I just think that, like I said, there's like something that I can't quite put my word to other than sisterhood develops. And that is really special and something that, coming from someone whose best friend was a guy, it's just not the same as like my best girlfriend. You know, and I think that that's why I don't think we're ever going to not have these women-specific programs. What do you think, Em?
On a biological level, men and women are wired differently.
Yep.
And that's just how it's always been. The world was built from the brain of a man. Our everything, our policies, the way things operate, because we're seen so long for feeble-minded, unable to be strong enough to handle stress. We're only meant to be on this earth to bring life to it. And so I completely agree that these groups of women in whatever category you are in are relatively new. Because a lot of times in the past, we weren't allowed to leave the house. We were homebound. Mm-hmm. Couldn't have our own bank accounts. I mean, that was within the past, what was it, 50 years? Was that in the 70s that we could get our own bank accounts without having our husbands with us? I mean,
yeah,
that is sickening.
Yeah. And then, I mean, still today there is, you know, in a lot of places we're not getting paid the same as our equal male counterpart.
Exactly. And also in different areas of the world, I mean, let's not even go into the unfortunate circumstances that some women are still living with. And a lot of times I will get some shade from people saying, oh, you're the crushers of ladies, for my group, the Texas Lady Crushers. Haha, you know, super funny. But I really think it's because some of these people see this bond between the women that are in here and non-binary individuals that we also have in our group. And it's this, like, I don't want to say this envy, but I do feel that a lot of men are somewhat wanting that connection, but in society, they are not allowed to share that sensitivity. Mm-hmm. They have been programmed to not, you know, show emotion toward their fellow guy, you know, homie, whatever you want to call him, buddy,
brother.
And so
I think that's changing though.
I absolutely do. And I think there is the word magic, Chelsea, that you mentioned, that, you know, you're not able to put a word to it, but when you are with a group of women who support and are learning together and experiencing things together, there's nothing like it. And it's not going anywhere. But the last thing I will say is that I emphasize to the ladies who I lead, is that the Texas Lady Crushers, the group I am the founder of, is a pro-woman group. It is not an anti-man group. And that is always specified, because I think sometimes we're seen as like anti-man. So, okay.
Sure. And I definitely understand why women want to have these groups, and it's awesome. But I was just curious. And I was more of like a thought process for me. Like, are we moving in the right direction by going kind of separating without trying? Yeah, I don't know. Whatever. It made sense in my mind.
I think I've had that in my arsenal for a while, and you just totally like opened up that seam.
Yeah, no, that's so fine. Sorry. No, I'm just saying, like, you know, if it's, I don't know. Anyway, and I also get what you mean, Chelsea, because I have some friends that I have female friends. Let's say I've been climbing with them for a year or so, and I'm like homies with them. And then another woman comes into the group, and like 2 weeks later, I look at those two and I'm like, I will never be friends with that person. Like that woman who just came into the group is friends with them right now. It's a little frustrating as a guy. I'll admit it.
Yeah. No, totally. I mean, it's kind of the same thing. If you look at guys, like if, you know, I come into, two dudes that are really good friends, it's like, yeah, but I wouldn't be your friend like that. There's no way.
Yeah. It's hard for sure.
You know, and Emily, you bring up a really good point that I keep wanting to say, is that I am using the term woman or women this whole time. And I did mention that She Sense Collective works with both cis and non-cis gender women, but also really I invite anyone that wants to celebrate the femininity within themselves, because guys also have, you know, this feminine side that some want to celebrate and like have that part connect with other people. But that includes like non-binary people and gender non-conforming humans as well. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
Well, I'm glad you did. I'm glad you did. Your website for She Sense Collective is beautiful, by the way. I meant to compliment you on that. I don't know if you built it, but if you did, bravo.
I did.
Oh,
I did.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Nice.
That means a lot. I definitely need to clean up some things, but I think it's a learning process, but I'm really happy about it. Thank you.
I'm going to bounce off of that, because you are also a fantastic writer. And I wanted to ask, when I think about many of the writers I enjoy or climbers who are writers who are climbers, you know, Brett Harrington, I also really enjoy what she writes. I love listening to Kathy Carlo, you know, for the love of climbing. I know I'm not including a lot of people, but just to, you know, for efficiency's sake, your voices are amazing. Your writing styles are great. So have you always been a writer? Have you always enjoyed pouring your heart onto a pad of paper or your computer and sharing it? Or is that relatively new as you've evolved into your mid-30s? You opened up with it, sister. I'm 33. I'm an old lady.
You can't call yourself an old lady when I'm older than you.
I am an old lady. I go to bed early sometimes.
I do too. We're approaching my bedtime. I'm just kidding.
You're not kidding. That's okay.
Let's see. I really have always enjoyed writing. Like in school or in college, I loved it. Loved it. Even in high school, I think I really liked it. And then after, I guess it was in college, is when like social media started coming about and the whole caption thing. And I've definitely had mixed feelings about social media in general. Although I'm coming around. But I would say it's more of a struggle, I think, to write what I want to write on social media. Partly honestly, there's fear of writing the wrong thing, fear of like pissing somebody off, or I don't know. It's just, yeah, if I'm going to be honest, that's what it is. Sometimes it's fucking terrifying to write what I want to write. And I don't write a lot of things because of that. But I am working as of this last week, ironically, to not be as afraid and just try to, I guess, come more from the heart and know that I'm not ever going to be able to please everybody. And I just need to be truthful, not only for myself, but also for other people, because we have over 7 billion people on this planet. And if I have gone through something, there are lots of other people who have gone through the same thing or who are going through the same thing. And I think it's really important to just share the good, the bad, and the ugly, so that other people know that they're not alone.
Jeremy has a rather large social media following, I think a little short of yours. And I've seen some stuff on his that would probably make me cry in the corner. And I feel like he handles it very well. Do you want to kind of share some of your experience, Jeremy?
Oh, I was just going to say, I kind of came to the same conclusion myself earlier this year, just to ignore everybody and share what I feel like sharing and not overthink it too much and, you know, be a little bit more vulnerable. People seem to enjoy it more and I get more response from it. Not that that's what my goal is, but it's the same thing. It's the reason why I started sharing. I started posting to Instagram was because I started climbing when I was 41. At the time I was, you know, I was heavy. I'm still heavy for a climber. I'm heavy for a human being, but I'm heavy, really heavy for a climber. I never see any guys posting on Instagram. It was all like shredded 15-year-old guys or 18-year-old guys or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, there's no old dudes out here with gray hair posting pictures. And so I did. And you know, I'm not going to take any credit for any of it, but I think I just got in at the start of it. And now you see a ton of people posting,
yeah,
you know, of all walks and body shapes and ages and everything. And I think that's awesome.
Dude, I gotta say, I don't follow you on Instagram, but I'm going to, because like I find that really inspiring that you just decided to just put it out there.
Yeah, and when I got into it, when I first started to get people following, I didn't understand like why would anybody like not that I'm going to compare myself to a celebrity, but why would a celebrity not want to share their life with people? And then after I got into it for a little while and I got smacked down by people and, you know, told stupid things, and you start to take it to heart. And I was just like, I don't feel like sharing anymore. Like even now I have a hard time feeling or sharing what I eat because I am a heavier climber and everybody wants to give me advice. Mm-hmm. In the past, people have wanted to give me advice about what diet I should be on or what I should be doing. Oh, you should really be trying to lose weight. Don't worry about climbing.
Yep,
you should
just
stop climbing and lose weight. And I'm like, that's not how climbing works, dude. Like climbing is a skill sport. You can't just stop climbing and focus on weight loss. I honestly just don't care. Like I just want to go climbing. Yes, I am trying to lose weight for my health and for whatever, but I'm not trying to lose weight specifically to climb harder because I honestly don't care anymore. Like I just want to go climb and hang out with my friends and climb as hard as I can right now. That's all that matters. It's been like the first 2 or 3 years of my climbing career wanting to climb a grade that I may never climb. And it's just the way it is. Cause I'm just, you know, I'm one of those people who's I have really bad with like knowing where my body is in space. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, it takes me a long time to learn new skills and where, you know, I may never get there, you know, whereas like my good friend who I climb with, he did parkour for 6 years before I started climbing. He can jump on, you know, something and knock it out in like 2 seconds and figure it out. It takes me 2 weeks to do the same thing. So anyway, I went on a little rant there.
No, I appreciate it. It was actually music to my ears. Like everything that you just said is really what I believe in, and not how I have led my climbing career for the entire duration of it. I definitely was one of those climbers who probably because of the whole body fat caliper thing was like, oh, I gotta lose weight. Oh, I gotta cut my calories and I don't care if I've just had the hardest training day ever. I'm definitely not eating past 5 p.m. and I can't eat this and that. I'm just going to eat this tomato right now. You know, like, so yeah, it's not a good place to be no matter where you are with it. And climbing is such a special sport for so many reasons. And you're absolutely right. It is a skill sport. And there's so many facets of it that we can enjoy no matter where we are in our personal journey, no matter what we look like or what weight we're carrying or not carrying, or, you know, even if we don't have full use of all of our limbs or whatever it might be, right? Like, climbing is actually one of those sports that's really good rehab for stroke patients because it helps connect the two sides of your brain together. So yeah, it's an awesome sport and you can push your limits, but it's also an awesome sport because it connects you to other humans, which I think is probably the best thing about it. It connects you to nature, which I think is the second best thing about it. And it just connects you more with yourself, which I think is amazing and really special.
Yeah. What I love about it is that everybody's on their own journey, mm-hmm. right? Amen. What I'm doing doesn't matter what Emily's doing. It doesn't matter what you're doing. You know what I mean? We can all go climbing together and you guys can climb really hard stuff and I can climb easier stuff. And it's
great. I know. Oh, I love that.
I just support what you're doing. Imagine that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One thing that really just, it hurts my heart to hear it. And I've said it myself as someone will ask, you know, about a climb, or I ask, you know, when did you start, or how, you know, when did you get into gym climbing, or have you gone outside? And they'll say something like, oh, I've just done it for 6 months or so. Like, I'm not really a climber, or, oh, it was just a 5'8". Like, listen to me. I'm like, I'm a 5'9" climber. No, I'm kidding. But they
what's one of the first?
No, go ahead.
I mean, what's one of the things you ask as a climber? Like, it eventually comes up, like, what grade do you climb?
What's your hardest send? Like, yeah.
Does it really matter?
Well, no, I guess what I'm trying to say, which I do agree completely, it does not matter. But what I feel is we should never diminish what we are doing on the rock or in the gym. I'll tell our girls, you ask one of your neighbors what they did tonight or this weekend, and I highly doubt that they're going to be saying that they chalked up and got on the wall, and their eyes kind of look up and it's like, yeah, I guess so. So there's this, I don't know, there's just this thing. I don't know if you've heard it in your world, Chelsea, where people diminish what they do or what type of climber they are, but I hope we can shift that as well.
Oh, girl, I hear it. Every single clinic that I teach, every single one-on-one client that I work with, everybody diminishes. Is that the right saying? Diminishes themselves?
They diminish what they have done. They diminish what they have accomplished. They downplay it. What would you say?
They're downplaying themselves. They
diminish
themselves.
Their achievements.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I find it the most frustrating and sad thing because, what I hear a lot too is I'll find a woman who we're like hitting it off really well and it's awesome. And I'm like, we should totally climb sometime. And she's like, oh no, like I only climb this level and like you're way better than me. And I get that all the time. And I just want there to be like this banner across my forehead that says, if I cared, I wouldn't ask you. Which I think sounds really harsh right now, but it's so frustrating to hear women downplay themselves. Like climbing is so special because we don't have to climb the same thing. As long as you know how to belay well, and even if you don't, let me teach you. Like, I love to teach, even if it's us going out and we're supposed to be climbing and I need to teach you something or want to teach you or you want me to teach you. Like, I'm psyched to do it. But yeah, I just think like maybe it's this like comparative thing that our society encourages is like, oh, well, I'm not as good as you, so we probably shouldn't do it together type thing. And I think that it's sad because actually people should be like, oh, you're better than me, if they need to go there anyway. And then they should be like, I definitely want to climb with you because I'm going to get better faster.
That was me to you. Yeah. That was me to you. I was like, yeah. You created space and you spend time with me. You taught me some footwork.
Mm-hmm. You know, my favorite.
Yeah. Which I have always kept in mind, you know, not hopping toes, putting my toe over, you know, movement with my hips, like those stuck with me. And, you know, wrapping up our time tonight, what would you say to those people who are not getting support, to the people who know who they are, who have said, oh, I'm just a, or I'm not really this? What would you say to them to help lift them up, or a resource that you could give them to help build that verbal confidence when you are speaking with somebody a little better or more experienced, or you see that professional that does offer to climb? You know, what kind of advice do you have to give them?
Well, that's one of my missions with She Sends, is just to empower women to own who and what they are in that moment, right? And so I always say to those people, like, no, like what you're doing is important. And actually I've been there and everybody else has been there too. And it's okay to be there. Like that's part of the whole journey, and how lucky you are to have this huge journey in front of you if you want it to be there. You know, like, to be honest, like sometimes I envy people who are newer in the whole climbing thing. You know, I think about like the art of being a beginner again, I think is so fun, right? Like you don't really quite have expectations yet. And even if you do, like you're still trying to figure it out and you have like this whole world in front of you. And then, you know, when you get old and weird like me, I'm just kidding. But after climbing for 22 years, like I'm definitely still learning, but it's like, it's hard to like make changes with climbing and whatever. So I would say just to like, instead of downplaying yourself, actually embrace where you are in that process, because it's a really special time.
I think that's great. I hope all of you heard that out there. I really do. And with that being said, Chelsea, we're wrapping it up for today.
Emily, did you want me to tell my story?
You have a story? Oh my gosh. It's just another few minutes. Can you give us like 5 minutes?
Well, actually, I was going to say, oh my God, I can't believe we're like finished, but we could keep going too if you have more questions or whatever.
Is that okay? Jeremy had this really funny one.
Totally good.
You'll get, okay. And then I want to respect it.
So this is a story about how I thought you were a stand-up comedian for a long time.
Emily or me? Me?
Chelsea, yeah. So for the first,
my co-host,
I can't wait to hear this
comedic relief.
So for the first 3 years, I climbed at Austin Bouldering Project, and in the hallway where you put your bags away and stuff, there's a bunch of posters on the wall, and all of them are kind of like pictures and stuff, but there's one that just says Chelsea Rude. And I'm like, well, the first time I saw it, I'm like, that's a bizarre name. That can't be someone's real name. Just a strange name. And then
for somebody so nice.
Yeah. And then for some reason, I think because, you know, there's Chelsea Handler and Chelsea Peretti, they're female stand-up comedians. I just, one day I must've just decided that was a poster for a stand-up comedian, which you might be thinking, why would there be a poster for a stand-up comedian in a climbing gym? But in the men's locker room, they have like South by Southwest posters and like other band posters, because, you know, Austin's live music capital.
Yeah.
I don't know. And then at some point, I think I figured out who you were.
That's amazing.
Because I follow you on Instagram. So yeah, it was just crazy.
That's amazing.
But I think what it was, I decided that it was a comedian's name, and then like someone must have interrupted me, and like I never bothered to like come back and rethink it.
Totally.
But of all those posters, the one of you must have given a talk or done a thing there. They're all like designs and stuff, and yours is just like your name, and I'm like, it just sticks out from all the rest of them. And you know, I probably climbed there 3 or 4 days a week for 3 years, so I saw it constantly.
That's so funny. But anyway, that's so weird too. But also, did you know, which you probably didn't know, I am not the only Chelsea Rude.
No,
like there are other Chelsea Rudes. I know. Mic drop.
It's a very punk rock name, like Johnny Rotten.
Oh yeah. Oh, maybe I should be
Chelsea Rude.
I've missed my calling.
Yeah, you should be in a punk rock band.
I mean, you're 34 now, so it's probably long gone.
Probably.
Don't pigeonhole her like that. Like,
no, there's no way.
30 is the new 20, so I'm like prime.
I love being in this decade. I am so glad the 20s are over. Learned a lot. They were very expensive, really painful. And not that life isn't painful in so many ways, but yes, I'm very proud of me in my 30s as well.
Wisdom.
Everyone I climb with is in their late 20s and early 30s, and every time I climb with them, like, I don't ever want to go back to that age, like trying to figure out life and try to get established, and I'm like, I'm good.
Yeah, I'm happy where I am. It's funny. Same. I think about the 20s and I'm like, ooh, there were some not so great times in my 20s.
Oh darn. I guess just some quick random questions. Are there any books or any series or any documentaries that you are really hooked on right now, or anything that you're going to recommend, or that you're going to, I'm prompting you to recommend something, anything that you would recommend that you, well,
I don't know if I would recommend it, but I have a terrible habit right now, or I don't know. Is it a habit? I don't know if it's a habit or not, but I have been watching Grey's Anatomy. Like, you would not believe, every single night, like one or two episodes, I am like in it. And you know how many seasons there are of this thing?
Is it 13?
No, 15? It's more than that. I don't even know how many of it, but well, this, like, at least 15.
The reason I know is because I went down that road in 2015.
Did you finish it?
So I think I got to the part where, sorry, spoiler alert, everyone who hasn't watched Grey's Anatomy, when McDreamy
dies,
the traumatic brain injury, and then at the end when Meredith Grey dipped out with the kids. I finished that, and then I think it was Netflix, so they didn't have the next season, and it was too long for me to, you know, remember everything that happened, and I was like, I can't go back, and so I just stopped after that one.
Yeah, I surpassed that.
They ruined it for me, Emily.
Well, I finished. Again, hello, so late. Orange is the New Black in its entirety a couple of months ago, because when it first came out, I watched the first three seasons. And same. Again, is, you know, Netflix didn't have the next one.
Yeah. Is it good? I've been thinking about that one.
Yeah, I really think, and it is especially prevalent with the Black Lives Matter you know, movement.
That's what I've heard.
For sure, with what the end of one of the episodes or seasons.
Yeah.
So.
Cool. Not really watching anything else.
Grey's Anatomy
it is, which is kind of embarrassing to admit, but I don't know. I started watching it when everything was locked down, so it kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
And I'll probably stop it at some point, but I haven't stopped it. I don't know.
Don't stop exploring.
I hear McDreamy dies, and I think once he dies, I'm out.
Tap out?
I might tap out at that point.
Now we know why you're really watching it.
Well, that is why I'm really watching it, is because he's so cute, and him and Meredith, I don't even know. That's done, though, I'm done.
Well, and I think that may have been part of why I was like, okay, that's it. Now what? No Patrick Dempsey?
I know. Although he gets better, obviously, after you stopped watching, he gets better. Things get great. Well, it's only a matter of an episode or two before shit hits the fan again.
That's to be told. So I think that's the first time we've spun out with a Netflix binge worthy confession session. Could be a habit. And with that, how about some shout outs? Anything that you are, along with She Sins Collective, any causes, any companies, any brands that you are just...
Yeah. I would say definitely the Climbing Grief Fund, just because they have helped me tremendously in learning how to work through grief and come out on the other side much stronger, maybe is not the right word, but definitely more of a resilient human, especially partaking in the sport in the mountains that we do. Also, obviously, a big shout out goes to Adidas and 510 just for all of their support for me over the years and their encouragement for me to start She Sims Collective earlier this year. And there's a million other organizations and people. I think that the organization Brown Girls Climb is a really great organization. And I've been in touch with a couple of those women. And so a big shout out to them for just offering the everything that they're offering and also just being a light and a guide for me. And yeah, shout out to you guys and M, because you're such a badass.
I don't know about all that. I try.
Yeah.
I have amazing, inspiring humans that do exactly that. They continually inspire me. And I have to say, not to be anything but completely honest, like, you're absolutely one of them. And I truly appreciate you, everything that you're doing for the climbing community and just women in general. And I thank you for joining us today, for your time, your energy.
Yeah. I thank you. This has been super fun. And it was also really nice to meet you, Jeremy.
Nice to meet you. I'm glad you could join us. I had a good time talking to you.
Yeah.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Y'all have an awesome day, and we will see you on the next episode.
Bye.